This morning, the devotees assembled on the asana will be answering any questions that any Medi may have. While we were coming here together, His Grace Jananivas Prabhu instructed me to speak something before the questions and answers. Since Jananivas Prabhu is my senior godbrother, my Shiksha Guru, and this is not an exaggeration, when I was a pujari in New Vrindavan in the mid-1970s, Srila Prabhupada sent us two Shalagram Shilas to worship and gave very simple instructions how to worship them. Bathe them with rose-scented water. Draw a face with Gopi Chandan. Offer sandalwood pulp and tulsi leaves. Then he added, first class Shalagram worship means tulsi leaves. And you could offer them a dhoti, a chadar, a crown, and a flute. And for further guidance, you should consult Jananivas, who is the pujari in Sri Mayapur Dham. For years after that, we were communicating through mail, not email, postal mail. And he was giving me so many wonderful instructions. And everything he ever told me, I tried my heartfelt best to follow. And through that experience, I gained great faith that if I simply follow the instructions of Jananivas Prabhu, I will be protected and Prabhupada will always be with me. So today he has instructed me to speak something. So I have just spoken something. But I want to satisfy him. Today is the disappearance day of Sripad Madhvacharya, one of the great spiritual masters. In fact, our sampradaya is named after him, the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. It is a extraordinary, beautiful subject matter to speak on. I will speak very briefly on a particular segment of Madhvacharya's life, his journey to Badrikashram. We know that Sripad Madhvacharya appeared in this world over 750 years ago in Padrakchetra, a little village not far from Udupi in South Kannada. He was the son of Madhyageha Bhatt. His parents not having any children, performed great austerities. And one day during a big festival in the Anandeshwar Mandir, the pujari, he mounted a raised platform, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead spoke through his mouth. He said, "Very soon, by the will of the Supreme Lord, an avatar of Vayu will appear within this world." Madhvacharya is said to be an incarnation of Vayu, Bhima, and Hanuman. And at different times he displayed the attributes of all three of these exalted personalities. From his earliest childhood, he performed supernatural powers and was so learned in the scriptures. It was simply inconceivable to anyone who witnessed him. When he was just a small boy, after his Upanayana, his initiation of his Brahman thread, he left his home searching for a guru. He was only about 9 years old. And he found Achyuta Preksha, who was a very, very exalted person, a great scholar, follower of Sripad Shankaracharya, a staunch monist in the Advaita school. Madhva became, his name was then Vasudev, became his favorite pupil. And when he was about 11 years old, he decided to take sannyas. It's a beautiful story. His parents resisted like anything because he was the only son. But somehow or other, he was so determined. He just went to live in his guru's ashram. His they went on a pilgrimage. His father chased after them to bring the father back home. Little 11-year-old Vasudev said to his father, who was a great Brahmin scholar, "I'm taking sannyas." He said, "You cannot take sannyas. I will never give permission for you to take sannyas." But he was so determined, ultimately his father fell at his feet, begging him to come home. And Vasudev said, "Ah, just see, it is a prophecy. A father will never bow down to a son unless the son is a sannyasi." And he tore a piece of his cloth and made it into a copan and put it on like a sannyasi. But his mother and father begged him and pleaded him, "You are our only son." He said, "All right, if you have another son, you will let me take sannyas." So by his powers, his mother had another son, but they still wouldn't let him take sannyas. Finally, he said, "If you don't give me your permission to take sannyas, you will never see my face again as long as you live. If you let me take sannyas, I'll come and visit you from time to time. That is your two choices." They gave their blessings. He was 12 years old in the Anandeshwar temple in Udupi when Achyuta Preksha gave him his danda and his saffron copan, shaved his head. In the whole area, they had never seen such an effulgent sight as this little boy who looked like he was glowing with spiritual energy, with the determination of a sannyasi. And he went on a tour of South India. And he converted the greatest scholars of the Mayavad school, the Jain school, and various atheistic schools of the six philosophies or the Siddhantas of tradition. Even the leader of the Sringeri Math challenged him to a debate and was defeated by Sripad Madhvacharya. At the time of taking sannyas, he was given the name Purnapragya, Tirtha. And his guru also, because of his great scholarship and his victory in all directions, he was given the name Ananda Tirtha. And he preached to his guru to give up the Advaitavad and accept the Dvaitavad philosophy. His spiritual master was very influenced by what his disciple was preaching. And he loved him more than anyone on earth. But he was so deeply rooted for so many years in Shankara's philosophy. He felt unless there is a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra to establish your principles, how will it really be accepted? It was at about that time when Madhvacharya was about 19 years old that he decided to take his trip to Badrikashram to visit the ultimate guru of his life, Srila Vyasadeva. He took his prominent followers with him, headed by Satya Tirtha, who he had already given sannyas to. They traveled by bare feet from Udupi all the way up to the Himalayas, where they came to the banks of the Alaknanda River, where the temple of Badri Vishal is. It is called Badrinath. Madhvacharya went into the temple all alone and closed the doors. He brought with him a manuscript he had written, which was his commentary on Bhagavad Gita. He wanted the blessings of Vyasadeva before he made it available to the public. He fasted and observed complete silence for over 40 days. In prayer, trying to prepare himself to meet with Srila Vedavyas. When he was in the inner sanctum of the altar of the temple of Badri Vishal, all alone, it was nighttime. His devotees, some of them were sleeping outside the door, some of them were awake. He read the introductory verse to his commentary on Bhagavad Gita, where he's giving praise to Lord Narayan, who is the Supreme Person, giving praise to Vedavyas, the incarnation of God who gave us the Vedas. And then expressed that I am presenting with the grace of these great personalities a very small commentary of Bhagavad Gita. When he presented that, a resounding sound came from the deity, giving full blessings for his commentary and for his search to find Vedavyas. And all of his followers outside could hear that. Now, Vyasadeva was living in a place called Adibadri, which is inaccessible to any human being. Way, way, way into the peaks of the Himalayas, where there is no roads, only mountain peaks of snow. Madhvacharya, he actually wrote out a will. He said that, I am now going to meet Vedavyas. It's an almost impossible situation to go where I'm going. I have no possessions. All I have is my conviction that Lord Narayan is the Supreme Person whose form is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss, and pure devotional service is the only way to approach him. That was his will that he left to the whole world. And then he said, If I am not able to come back alive from this journey, please carry on this great mission. He told his followers that no one should dare to come with him. But one devotee named Satyatirtha was inseparable from Madhvacharya. He insisted, I will come with you. And he just followed him. Sripad Madhvacharya began at sunrise and walked so fast, without stopping, without eating, without saying anything. He just walked. And Satyatirtha was running after him and running and running and running. And by the time the sunset came, Sripad Madhvacharya was showing absolutely no fatigue. He was absolutely enthusiastic and full of energy. And poor Satyatirtha was totally exhausted, practically on the verge of death. But what could he do? He would never be able to walk all the way back to where the other devotees were, and he couldn't continue forward. Sripad Madhvacharya looked back at him, and with a wave of his hand, a breeze came and took him right back to the temple of Badrinath to be amongst his god brothers. And Madhvacharya continued the journey. After days and days and days of walking, where no man has ever gone, he came within these snow-covered Himalayan peaks upon a heavenly abode where the river Saraswati flowed and there were wonderful trees. In fact, there was a Badri tree, and under it sat the worshipable Lord of his life, Vyasadeva, surrounded by the most learned great rishis from all over the universe, studying the scriptures from him. Sripad Madhvacharya was experiencing the highest ecstasy of his life, to be in the presence of his guru. He fell prostrate at Vyasadeva's feet and surrendered his life and his soul. It was there that Vyasadeva blessed him to distribute his commentary on Bhagavad Gita. For many days he sat at his guru's feet, absorbing the nectar of his every word. Vyasadeva then instructed him to write a commentary on the Vedanta Sutras and told him that he would speak through him. He would empower him in every way to establish his Siddhanta or the conclusions of these truths. After taking leave of Vyasadev, Madhvacharya returned to Badrinath, where his disciples were eagerly waiting for him. On the way down from the Himalayas, with Vyasadeva's blessing, he simply began to speak his commentary on the Brahma Sutras. And as he spoke, Satyatirtha wrote down everything he spoke. By the time they came to the plains of India, the entire commentary, the Purna Pragya Bhasya, was complete. And Satyatirtha even made copies of it. The first copy was sent to Achyutapreksha. On the way down, he went through many different countries, down to the river Godavari, and transformed the hearts of thousands of people, even some of the greatest scholars and kings, to become Vaishnavas. And he returned to Udupi. There, he discussed with Achyutapreksha, his guru, his commentary of the Brahma Sutra. And Achyutapreksha surrendered to his own disciple and accepted Madhvacharya as his guru. The guru accepted his disciple as a guru. And Madhvacharya gave him the new name, Purushottam Tirtha. And he became one of the acharyas under Sripad Madhvacharya in our line. While in Udupi, one day, Sripad Madhvacharya, early in the morning, he felt a great inspiration that on this day I will see my Lord Krishna. He began to compose with beautiful music the Dvadasa Stotram, wonderful prayers glorifying Sri Krishna. He was walking to the seashore to take his morning bath. When he came to the seashore, he sat on the sand. The sun was rising. He continued composing these beautiful verses, singing them in Sankirtan, meditating on Krishna, anticipating his arrival. Just at that time, a boat was coming from Dwarka, which was owned by a merchant. He was carrying great wealth of merchandise to be sold. A windstorm took place. The waves were smashing against the boat. The boat got caught in a sandbar. It was on the verge of just toppling over. It was a hopeless situation. The seamen were trying with all their powers to rescue, but it appeared that everything was finished. Then they saw the effulgent form of Madhvacharya sitting on the sand, and he took his chatur and just waved it. Immediately, the storm ended and the boat came right to the shore. He saved their lives and all their property. The merchant offered Madhvacharya anything that was on his boat, immense wealth. Madhvacharya said, "I have no concern for material wealth, but you're coming from Dwarka? Perhaps you have Gopi Chandan for Tilak. you can give me some Gopi Chandan. Now, he put Gopi Chandan on the boat only for the purpose of balancing the boat from all the expensive things that he had. He came off with several big blocks of Gopi Chandan. Several men had to carry it. And when they carried that block, on Madhvacharya's instruction, they carried that block back to Udupi, where it opened up and the form of Udupi Krishna emerged. They bathed the deity in Madhva Sarovar. And when it came to bringing it into the math where Madhvacharya was residing, 30 men could not lift it, because Krishna did not want to be carried by anyone but his pure devotee. So Shripad Madhvacharya lifted with both hands and brought him. And by that time he had so many followers. Everyone was eager to build a magnificent temple for Udupi Krishna. They were talking, let's build a temple like in Srirangam. But Madhvacharya wanted a very, very simple temple. A very, very simple temple with a simple altar. And he established the worship. Perhaps the most intricate worship of the time in all of India. He established such devotional standards. And so that for centuries to come, the deity would never be neglected, he gave 8 of his senior most disciples sannyas and taught each one of them exactly how to worship the deity, practically from the Brahma Muhurta hour till night. At every moment, there was something that was to be done in the service of the deity of Udupi Krishna. He trained them all meticulously and organized it so that individually as well as collectively, they and their disciples would carry on the deity worship. He organized that there would be, in each month of the 8 months, there would be a senior sannyasi who was the guru of the whole mat and a junior sannyasi who was a successor. And no one but those two could ever, for all time to come, touch the deity. And each of them were given a certain period of time to worship the deity, and they would rotate. Since the time of Madhvacharya, almost 800 years ago, these standards have been upheld. Only one of these 2 sannyasis of the 8 mats, now there's 12 mats, have ever physically touched the deity of Udupi Krishna to perform the worship. And now I believe it's what every 16 years they get a chance to worship the deity each month. And for the 14 years they're not worshiping the deity, their whole lives practically are just preparing the funds, the facilities, and the arrangements for when they get that opportunity. It's a very festive, wonderful, wonderful temple environment. It was at that time that Shripad Madhvacharya, his own heart's deep desire was to return to see Vyasadev in Badrigashram. So now he had many senior sannyasi disciples and others, and they all traveled with him, again by foot, from South India, Parasoram Kshetra, all the way up to Badrinath. A few incidents took place in their trip which are worthy of sharing with you, just to show the power of Madhvacharya's devotion. One time, as they were traveling, they came to an area where there was a very powerful Hindu king. And he believed that he would get great merit by performing pious activities. But he performed his pious activities in the most impious ways. Does that make sense? Digging lakes is a pious activity. But he didn't want to pay anyone. Anybody who lived near that area where he wanted to dig a lake, he had his soldiers force them to do it for free. And if there were any travelers or pilgrims, they would be arrested and had to work at the risk of their life until the lake was complete. So Madhvacharya was traveling with his followers, and they were apprehended by the military. He said, "You have to dig this lake." Sripad Madhvacharya, he said, I want to meet the king. We'll dig the lake, but first I want to meet the king. They couldn't resist him. He was so attractive. They brought him before the king. The king said, "Whether you're a sannyasi or anything, it doesn't matter to me. You have to work. Here's the pick. Here's the shovel. Dig." Madhvacharya said, "You're such a great king. And every great soul teaches by their example. We've never dug lakes before. We don't know how to do it. You teach us and then we'll follow." He spoke so sweetly that the king went out with his shovel and started digging to teach. And soon all of his followers, thinking, how could we let the king dig? All of his ministers and soldiers started digging. And they got so absorbed in digging that Madhvacharya and all his followers walked away and nobody even knew. Continued their pilgrimage to Badrikashram. On another occasion, they were in a jungle and some dacoits, a whole gang of dacoits, attacked them with weapons, swords and clubs and knives. Now, Sripad Madhvacharya knew the best way to overcome someone is to know exactly where their weaknesses are. So as they were running to them with weapons, Sripad Madhvacharya took a piece of his cloth that he was wearing off, rolled it into a ball, and threw it. And by his mystic powers, to all the dacoits, it looked like a big ball of gold. Although it was just a piece of cloth, it looked like a ball of solid gold. So each of the dacoits ran to get it, but none of them could get to it, because everyone wanted it for themselves. They were fighting over this ball of gold, and soon they started stabbing each other and fighting with swords and knives and clubs. They all killed each other. And then Madhvacharya picked up his cloth and put it back around his neck and carried on with his journey. Now, there is a purport to this. This is the nature of greed. Sometimes a family or friends or a society or even religious people, they could be very united for a common cause. But due to greed, due to selfishness, they become enemies and even try to destroy each other. We see families when they're basically poor, they live together and work together very nicely. But when a lot of wealth comes, oftentimes all the children end up either fighting with swords or fighting in courts over who gets the wealth. Most of the wars in this world are fought over land. Land means wealth. Individually and collectively, when greed enters a person's heart, our own brothers and sisters as human beings, family members, even people within our own religious society, we can become enemies, even destroy each other. It is one of the curses of Kali Yuga. Kali, or quarrel and hypocrisy, resides wherever there's illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and meat eating. But Kali told Parikshit, none of these things exist in your kingdom. You have to give me some place to be. He said, Hare Krishna. Wherever there is greed for wealth or gold, quarrel and hypocrisy will reign in that place. They continued their journey, and then a gang of 100 dacoits in the middle of another jungle attacked them, all with swords. There was one very small little monk named Upendra Tirtha, who was a disciple of Madhvacharya. And when he saw these people coming, running toward the sadhus with swords to kill them, Upendra Tirtha never got in a fight in his life. He was a very peaceful, nonviolent person. But Madhvacharya just glanced on him, and he became empowered with Bhima's strength. And he just attacked one of the dacoits, grabbed the sword out of his hand, and single-handedly, with one sword, fought all 100 dacoits and defeated them all. And Sripad Madhvacharya was just sitting off to the side, smiling as the whole pastime was taking place. In another place, a dangerous man-eating tiger jumped right on Satyatirtha with his claws and his fangs. And Madhvacharya just patted, just went like this to the tiger's head, and the tiger fell unconscious. Ultimately, they came to the Himalayas, to Badrinath. As everybody sat and waited at the Badrinath temple, Sripad Madhvacharya, again alone, traveled by foot to Adi Badri, where again he fell at the feet of Srila Vedavyas. Vyasadeva embraced him with such love, so proud of his disciple. And out of the affection of his heart, Srila Vyasadeva gave Sripad Madhvacharya 8 of his own personal Shalagram Shilas that he worshipped. And also instructed Madhvacharya to write a commentary on the Mahabharata. With the blessings of his Gurudev, he descended again down and compiled his commentary of Mahabharata and gave one of each of those Shalagram Shilas to each of his 8 mats, which they are worshipped even to this day. Many things took place in his return trip to Udupi. I'll just note one, and then we will have the pleasure of asking questions to these great souls on this, on the asana. They came to Kurukshetra. Shripad Madhvacharya was telling his devotees all the intimate pastimes of Bhima. They were enthralled. And Madhvacharya took them into a lonely rice or a lonely paddy field. Just an agricultural field, nothing and no one anywhere around. The devotees didn't know what their guru was doing. Then he started digging in the ground. They were really bewildered. What's happening? In this out-of-the-way place, Gurudev is digging in the ground until he pulled out from the ground Bhima's club that he defeated the Kurus with and explained to them exactly the glories of this club and how it not only destroyed the sons of Dhritarashtra, but it practically pulverized gigantic elephants. Then he put it back in the ground and buried it, and it has never again been seen to this day. Shripad Madhvacharya, he especially defeated the misconceptions of Mayavad philosophy by establishing through logic, reason, philosophy, science, and scriptural support that the Supreme Absolute Truth is ultimately a person. And the only way to approach him is through devotion. When he was 79 years old in Udupi, in the Anandeshwar temple, he was giving a lecture on the Aitareya Upanishad. He spoke so beautifully. At one point, the demigods from the upper planets showered an entire curtain of flowers upon him as his disciples were sitting watching. And when the shower of flowers ended, Shripad Madhvacharya was gone. He had left his earthly body to return in his spiritual body to Badrikashram to live forever at the feet of Srila Vedavyas. Shripad Madhvacharya ki jai. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu especially selected this parampara to take initiation in, because he considered two aspects of Madhvacharya's mission to be of ultimate importance: the complete refutation of the impersonalistic conception of God and the worship of the deity of Krishna. And on this basis, Lord Chaitanya spread his Harinam Sankirtan movement from Sri Mayapur Dham. We would like to hear from Janani Vas Prabhu and Pankajangari Prabhus their realizations of living in Sri Mayapur Dham for the past 35 years.